Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, here with your engineer, Aladdin Al-Kathiri. Thanks for joining us to listen in. And I am keeping faith for some warm weather. I'm sure you're looking forward to it, too. It's just starting to feel like spring, and our housemates, the house finches, have arrived for their annual return to their nest on top of KHOI's little loudspeaker above KHOI's front door. I don't know exactly where they go for the winter, but they come back every year, and it's a beautiful thing to see when the babies start to grow up. They line up on top of the two benches in front of the station building and use it as a launching pad to practice flying. So we are eagerly awaiting this year's babies. Mom and Dad are sitting on the eggs. A tip of the hat to Mr. Kurt Cobain, 25 years without the genius of Kurt Cobain. And it's Friday, so here is the faithful Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of this past week's local news from the pages of Ames Tribune. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much. As always, I'm happy to be here, in this seat, on Friday. Let's begin where we usually do, with a look back at what made news last Saturday. And what made news was the appearance of Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren in Perry, in Dallas County. The Massachusetts senator said the United States has a chance to change the course of the country by, in her words, attacking corruption, changing economic values, and protecting democracy. She said the things she's asking for are hard, but again, in her words, we can't quit now. We have a chance to dream big and fight hard and win this thing in 2020. Also last Saturday, a report about a fire that damaged a home in Ames. It took place in the 300 block of 21st Street. One person inside the home suffered minor injuries but refused medical treatment. The fire was contained to the basement. Also Saturday, a report on the goodbye ceremony for Captain Barry Thomas at the Story County Sheriff's Office and the hello ceremony for his replacement. Thomas recently retired as chief deputy. He will be replaced by Lieutenant Nicholas Lenny. Sunday brought word of another Democratic presidential hopeful who made his way to these parts. Former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Julian Castro stopped by the Farm Grounds coffee shop in Nevada for coffee and conversation. He said if he were elected president, he would spend every day, in his words, working so that you and your family can have good health care, that your kids and grandkids could get a good education, and that you can get a job opportunity no matter your background. He said he's running for president to bring new leadership and a new vision to the nation. Also Sunday, retiring Ames Assistant City Manager Bob Kindred reflected on his 38-year career, one that spanned thousands of days, five mayors, and 34 council members. He said he always knew he wanted to be in government as a way to help people and decided that working on the local level would be the best arena for him. He said his policy always was, in his words, "Just tell me, I'm all ears." He said he found it an honor to be someone that people went to when they were upset or passionate because it let him find ways to help them. There was also a story about growing concern in the veterinarian community nationwide about mental illness and the increase of suicide rates within the profession. A recent study showed that male veterinarians were more than twice as likely to die of suicide as the general population in the United States, and female vets were three times more likely to die of suicide. No one knows why, but theories include pressure to keep patients healthy and clients happy, along with compassion fatigue, the emotional aspect of witnessing trauma. And one more note from this past Sunday, word that former Iowa State University men's basketball coach Fred Hoiberg is getting back into coaching, this time at the University of Nebraska. Hoiberg, known as the mayor around these parts, signed a 7-year, $25 million contract to coach the Huskers, and that set off plenty of talk from Iowa State fans. Tuesday brought word that two people had gone to the hospital after fire destroyed a home on West 4th Street in Boone. A dog and cat were found deceased in the home, and another cat was found alive under a bed. Authorities said the home is a total loss and that the fire is thought to have started in one of the bedrooms. The cause remained under investigation. Also Tuesday, a report that an Ames man had been sentenced to up to 30 years in prison on federal sex crime charges. 28-year-old Tyler Jean Harris had pleaded guilty to 6 counts of sexual exploitation of a child, 1 count of distribution of child pornography, and 2 counts of possession of child pornography. In addition to his prison sentence, Harris was also ordered to serve 15 years of supervised release after he completes his time behind bars. There was more on Tuesday, including a report that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds had appointed 2 new judges in the state's Judicial District 2B, which includes Story and Boone counties. Gina Batting and Amy Moore will fill 2 district court judge positions left vacant by the retirement of 2 judges. The 2B Judicial District also includes Carroll, Greene, Hamilton, Hardin, Humboldt, Marshall, Pocahontas, Sac, Webster, and Wright counties. Also Tuesday, a report on one of the last living survivors on Schindler's List, who spoke Sunday night at Iowa State University. 87-year-old Selenia Binez was one of the 1,100 people saved from the Holocaust by Oscar Schindler and his factory. She said Schindler's factory became a safe haven because at first, people walked from the camps to the factory. The Nazis allowed Schindler to create a camp at the factory. Schindler and his wife brought in supplies and food to the prisoners. As the Russian army was advancing, Schindler was told the camp was going to be liquidated, so he moved the factory to Czechoslovakia and got permission to have 800 men and 300 women moved into that new factory. The events were captured in Steven Spielberg's 1993 movie Schindler's List. As Selenia Binez put it, "Oscar Schindler gave me a life. Mr. Spielberg gave me a voice." One more note from Tuesday, that the Boone County Fairground Community Building was being transformed into a teen maze this week. The maze was created by YSS in Kiwanis Division 11, and is designed to teach 7th grade students about the negative and positive impacts their choices can have in their lives. 15 schools were expected to attend the event, with about 1,200 students taking part. Wednesday brought word that the Ames City Council held a workshop on the city's new comprehensive plan, called Ames Plan 2040, on Tuesday night. The new proposal would replace the city's previous comprehensive plan, which was adopted more than 20 years ago. City staff had received public feedback from hundreds of people, with 35% of those participating saying the addition of retail, shopping, and dining options would improve the quality of life in Ames. Part of the survey asked about the most important reasons for choosing to live in Ames. The two top responses were proximity to and distance to work and the quality of schools in the area. Council members heard a report that listed advantages and disadvantages that Ames has compared with other cities in Iowa. The report said Ames is competitive compared to Ankeny and Des Moines and has a lower cost of land and building space. But Ames is constrained by a limited supply of shovel-ready land, limited housing stock, and a lack of downtown business attractions compared to Des Moines. Also Wednesday, a report on the Story County Board of Supervisors meeting Tuesday, where the supervisors approved revised changes to their economic development process and policies. One of the changes is that housing development, rehabilitation, and conversion projects will now be eligible under Urban Renewal Area Program Tax Increment Financing Assistance. In other action, the board approved a request for nearly $6,000 toward the addition of concrete pads and a sidewalk to the animal control facility. The supervisors also proclaimed the week of April 15th through the 21st Volunteer Week and proclaimed the entire month of April National Volunteer Month. Wednesday also brought word that the Ames School Board had approved putting site preparation for the new high school out for bids and set a public hearing date on the issuing of the bid. Site development includes demolition, earthwork, and site restoration. The board will receive bids April 30th. The new high school's construction project is set to begin in early June. Meanwhile, there was a report Wednesday that Friedrich Iowa Realty had finished demolishing a neighboring building last week in a step toward expanding its own downtown Ames office at 6th Street and Duff Avenue. The demolition of a sixplex building and garages took place adjacent to the Friedrich property. The space will be used for office expansion and additional parking. Wednesday also brought word that Stash the Trash, the annual Ames community-wide cleanup, will celebrate its 20th anniversary tomorrow, Saturday, when volunteers spread out across the city to pick up trash. The event will run from 8 tomorrow morning until 2 in the afternoon. Volunteers can register and check in at Ryman Gardens anytime during the event and get a pair of gloves and trash bags before they start. Volunteers have a choice to clean up a neighborhood, a park, or around campus, and for the first time, there's a chance for some volunteers to pick up only recyclable materials they find throughout the day. Volunteers can head back to Ryman from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. for a free lunch and free admission to the gardens. One more note from Wednesday, just in case you're looking for something else to do this weekend, Ballard High School is putting on stage performances of the Disney favorite The Little Mermaid this weekend, starting tonight at 7, followed by a 7 o'clock performance tomorrow night, Saturday, and a matinee at 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Thursday, yesterday, brought word the Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke appeared at Iowa State University on Wednesday night. He told a crowd in the Memorial Union's maintenance shop that he's, in his words, leading a critical charge against President Trump. The Texas native said the nation is on the verge of a progressive response that will be accomplished with economic and political democracy. He said he would push for universal health care and protecting reproductive rights for women. He said climate change is the greatest existential threat to the nation. Also yesterday, a report about how Story County farmers are reaching across state lines, offering resources to Nebraska farmers affected by flooding. A group of farmers coordinated the collection and transportation of large bay hails after hearing about the challenges Nebraska farmers are facing after recent blizzards, rain, and flooding. There was more yesterday, including a report that local agencies, including the Iowa State University and Ames Police Departments, had teamed up for the Start by Believing Day and Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Both agencies took part in handing out information and T-shirts, all in an effort to help prevent sexual assaults. And one more note, interior areas of Hickory Grove Park near Colo have been closed because of a project to restore the lake's park. The East Game Area is also closed, along with the beach and swimming area, concessions, and all trails. It's all part of a more than $3 million restoration project. The lake will be drained and dredged, and the plan is to reopen it next spring. And there you have it on this Friday, your summary of the past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, ready to take the weekend off, but promising to return right here on Monday in this very seat with news from around the state of Iowa. In the meantime, have a safe and happy weekend.
Hello, this is George Belitzos. I am a leader of the Iowa Network Against Human Trafficking and Slavery, and we want to invite the public to come to the second showing of a major film, a documentary about sex trafficking in Iowa. The film was premiered last week at the Civic Center in Des Moines and had a very good reception. It's an hour-long film produced by an ISU graduate by the name of Vanessa McNeil. This is her fourth documentary film. Grit Shock is the name of the documentary, and it exposes the hidden and disturbing reality behind sex trafficking in our very own state of Iowa. An often overlooked reality of sex trafficking is the demand side in the industry, and that is what her film and documentary explores, is the buyers, the Johns, who keep this horrible crime against humanity running and flush with money. They are using the bodies of their victims to profit, and it's a terrible crime. We just had, since the first of the year, 9 convictions and prison sentences given to traffickers in our state. We hope you'll come to see the film. It's, again, open to the public. Right after the film, which is a hour-long documentary, there'll be a panel with an FBI agent, as well as the individual who teaches sex trafficking to law enforcement at the Law Enforcement Academy, representative of Teens Against Human Trafficking, which is a YSS program, and the filmmaker herself, Vanessa McNeil. They will answer questions from the audience. We hope you'll come Monday, the 8th of April at 7 p.m. on the ISU campus in the Great Hall of the Memorial Union.
And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, and lots going on as usual. Thanks for coming to listen. The Westboro Baptist Church from Topeka, Kansas has announced on their website called God Hates Fags that they plan to be in Ames this coming Monday morning to picket. According to their website, they plan to picket Ames High students from 7:20 to 7:50 and then picket Iowa State University students from 8:05 to 8:35 at an undisclosed location. The Westboro Baptists have become well known for protesting anything from the funerals of American soldiers and churches and high schools to protest against gay rights and condemning what they call the sins of America and the gay community. They have come to Ames prior to this, once in 2009 and once in 1998. The website of Westboro Church provides a great deal of literature, a lot of literature, and a sample of their writing offers 701 passages from the Bible proving God's hate and wrath for most of mankind. They claim that it's a fallacy that God loves everyone, calling this a theology that is touted by every major so-called Christian religion in the United States of the more than 600,000 churches and synagogues in the U.S., and they claim that this view of God is the hue and cry of a sinful and corrupt generation. They go on to post a list of thousands of people in the Bible who have incurred God's wrath, and God has struck down and killed as a result. They go on to describe numerous ills ranging from diseases to tsunamis to old age, slavery, car accidents, and much, much more that would not exist if God indeed did love everyone, saying this world was built for a struggle, good versus evil, hell versus heaven. So it's hard not to interpret this all as just a blatant hate speak. KHOI attempted to get a statement from the church and to ask them what their intention was by coming to Ames, but we did not get a response. So what does this all mean, and how does this bring them to picket Ames High students? Meanwhile, a counter-demonstration is being organized here in Ames to meet them when they show up at Ames High School. Jen Hibben and Tara Andrews are among the planners of the counter-demonstration. Welcome to Local Talk.
Thanks.
Tara Andrews is chair of Ames Pride, and Jen is pastor at Collegiate United Methodist Church and campus minister at Wesley Center. Tell us what's going on.
Ames Pride, several of the local churches, there's lots of community organizations and just local citizens. This is a community event. We're all just sort of gathering Sunday evening at one of Jen's church's buildings, the annex, and we're going to sort of get together with everybody from the community and just sort of talk about what's going to happen Monday, perhaps make some signs, and just sort of coordinate everyone. And then on Monday morning, there's going to be a community-led show of support and love for the Ames High students.
Have a lot of people been expressing concern about this?
Concern, yes. Mainly that Westboro has chosen to come to Ames and just sort of wanting to know what the community is going to do in response.
And do I understand correctly that Commander Huff is going to be coming to the meeting as well?
Yes, on Sunday evening. Commander Huff from the Ames Police Department will
Thank
be there.
You.
Absolutely. And he's going to be there to just sort of make sure everybody has the proper information on what can and can't be done. I believe Ames Police Department is planning on keeping everyone very separate from the official release that they put out.
So this plans to be a legal demonstration?
Yes, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. All coordinated very, very peacefully. And like I said, he wants to make sure, just as we do, that everyone has the same information.
Okay, can you explain why, first of all, you think they are actually coming to Ames? And second of all, why Ames High? Why go there?
There's lots of conjecture about why they're here. They don't put out like an official word. It's very
Yeah, they do have a schedule on their website.
Absolutely.
And Ames is on there, but normally they put out a release.
Nothing about
us. There's nothing
yeah.
about Ames.
Lots of conjecture, but and I think it sort of has something to do with the open and welcoming community that Ames is, just overall.
That they're protesting that.
Yep.
Or we might just be on the way home from another
yeah,
protest.
Yeah, sure.
it's that like up in the air.
Yeah.
In terms of understanding what's going on in their minds.
And what exactly do you think they're objecting to at Ames High? They're picketing something.
I don't think anyone knows exactly. Like I said, there's lots of conjecture, but I'm definitely not going to try to put words in their mouths.
What do you call what you're planning on Monday morning?
We've been really trying to be really clear in our communication that it's not a counter-demonstration. It's not a counter-protest. It's just a demonstration of love and support for the students there. There's supposed to be three people from Westboro there, and so we already know that we'll have more than three people showing up. So there isn't a need to engage them at all. The need is just to let students know that your community has shown up for you today. The community loves you. The community will support you, even in the face of really vile hate, like what they'll probably be seeing, although some of the students might not even see it because there'll be so many other people there supporting them.
This is a showing of love and support for gender and sexual minorities at Ames High School.
High School. Mm-hmm. You're kind of implicitly saying that's probably who's going to be targeted by Westboro.
Generally, that's who they target is that's anyone who target. Who's not them.
And the ones who are probably most susceptible to that type of hate speech, those who see themselves in those signs, those who see themselves in what they're saying. And so there needs to be a much stronger message than what they're offering to those particular students, even if that's not their intent to reach them.
And why are you choosing to go to Ames High instead of their second location, which is at a more convenient time, a little bit later in the morning, which would be at Iowa State?
The overall feeling is that at Iowa State, university students, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old and up, are generally much more well-equipped to deal with this sort of rhetoric from a group like Westboro. And we wanted to make sure that the children that Westboro is going to be targeting at Ames High School, we make sure that they have the support from their community that everybody thinks they need.
Are you going there because you feel this is a more vulnerable group of people?
Absolutely. That's exactly why we're going to Ames High School.
I respect that you're trying not to pigeonhole the situation yourselves or even the Westboro people by putting words in their mouth. This is a general feeling that this is going to be a moment of hate speech and a show of hostility against Ames High students. In some form, you as community members want to send a different message to high school students. That's essentially what you're saying?
Yeah.
Not just on Monday morning, but every single day of the year that they always have the community's love and support.
You've taken the trouble to organize this and taken the trouble to come here to talk about it. And like you said, a number of churches are involved. In the last few minutes, would you communicate your thoughts on the issue of hate speech?
One of the things that I'm hearing from people at our church and from the community, too, is, of course, this idea of not giving them as much attention, to maybe not show up, to not be a part of it because that's what they're looking for. When the community shows up, we should be there. When we are asked by an organization like Ames Pride or by the students or by people who need us to show up, that we show up and we do that. And it's been a completely positive response in terms of the churches in Ames who have been a part of coming out. We happen to just have a space that we want to share for the whole community to get together on Sunday. And I was talking to Tara a little bit earlier just to say that, that there is different perspectives and approaches to this, but that we do know that when we stay silent, we often side with the oppressor. And so it's important for us as people whose faith or whose ethics or whose understanding of being in the world is supposed to be about love and acceptance, that we show up when those opportunities present themselves. And so we're happy to be a part of the larger community's witness of love.
Mm-hmm. Ames Pride, obviously, we deal specifically, generally with gender and sexual minorities in Central Iowa, but we believe that all it takes, just like Dr. King believed, that all it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. The exact same message that I believe Jen is passing on, and it just all comes down to we want to make sure that the kids, the faculty, the staff, and everyone involved at Ames High School knows that their community supports them.
This is a community voice being expressed here.
Absolutely.
And I guess presumably it's also support for every effort Ames High is making to be inclusive.
Absolutely.
Show support.
100%.
Have you had any communication with high school students about this?
We actually do have a high school student on our board of directors at Ames Pride. And I do know that there is some talk of things happening within the school that's being organized by students.
Okay, thank you. If somebody listening wants to come to be part of this conversation on Sunday, when and where should they go?
The annex of Collegiate United Methodist Church, and it's at 130 South Sheldon. We're meeting around 6 p.m. is when we're going to try to start. It's very much a drop-in event from 6 to 10 p.m. Commander Huff from the Ames Police Department will be there at 6:30 p.m. to sort of disseminate the information that he has, make sure everybody has, like I said earlier, the same information.
And what time is it again?
From 6 to 10 p.m., and Commander Huff will be there at 6:30.
And the annex is, this is the the building on Sheldon.
It's two behind Dunkin' Donuts. It's the bigger building behind Dunkin' Donuts. And you're all welcome to park in any of our parking lots there that are on our property.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking with Jen Hibben, who is from the Wesley Center of the Collegiate United Methodist Church in Campustown, and Tara Andrews, who is with Ames Pride. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
And I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Lots going on, as usual. Thanks for listening. Here's Trey Moore, KHOI's intern from Greenlee School of Journalism, with his next installment of his series, Ames Untold.
KHOI, Ames Community Radio, KHOI. Trey Moore here with another episode of Ames Untold. A spiritual, eye-opening, pulling the wool from over your eyes trip to the motherland. A trip to Morocco changed an ISU student's life forever. It changed their perspective on the world. It changed them spiritually. It changed just how they would go about their life from now on. We have an interview with a student named Julius who went to Morocco and said it changed his whole viewpoint on the world. Let's get into it.
What's up, everybody? How you doing?
You know, what made you decide to take this trip to the motherland, specifically Morocco?
Well, I've always just wanted a good excuse to go. I know that, like, with the scholarships that I had the opportunity to be able to go and, like, have my money transfer over to another school in, like, another country. But, like, most of my options seem really limited. Like, I remember, like, people were trying to talk me out of going to Africa, like, for whatever reason. Like, oh, like, it's not safe. Like, you better watch out. Like, why don't you just, like, study Arabic in, like, France or in Britain or whatever when they don't even, like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just weird. But yeah, I'm a linguistics student. I study French. I study Arabic. And Morocco happens to speak both of them. So, like, I could take classes. I had the money to go. Like, everything just, like, lined up for me. I'm really blessed to have the opportunity. Alhamdulillah. And yeah, it was just, like, it's cool. It just lined up for me. I'd always wanted to go to Africa. And, like, yeah, so I did it. I was supposed to check with my advisor, and I didn't. Because, like, the deadline was, like, before the day she said we could meet. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go anyway. It kind of worked out. Like, a lot of my credits transferred over. It was pretty dope. So, yeah, I just had the opportunity and took it. That was basically it.
And so preparing to go for the trip, what was your process on how you got your mental prepared? I guess what were the beginning stages of getting yourself together and getting on the plane? And what was all that initial experience like from getting yourself together and landing your first day over there?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's pretty funny. I remember, okay, so I was working with the Boys and Girls Club, in, like, the North Omaha area. Shout out North O. I was working at the King Science Middle School. And I remember there was this Earth Gang song that came out, and it was like, I remember I would be going to work. Like, basically the thing that was getting me through the summer was knowing I was gonna be going to Africa later. So I was, like, on my grind, like, working, like, you know, like, I mean, they were just, like, 6-hour shifts, whatever, but it was still, like, it just kind of felt like a grind knowing that, like, Morocco was on the other side of that. I don't know. I was just like, and then this song came on, and it was like some like whipping through the hood on my way to Dubai, and I was talking about just like flying off, like going from like where you came from, where your family came from, to like going to like other countries and like going to Africa and stuff. That's why, like, I just thought about that a lot, and I was like, damn, just thinking about everything coming full circle, like my ancestors coming, however they got here, probably not voluntarily, maybe voluntarily, who knows, from Africa to America, and then like my family going through what we went through, like growing up the way I was raised, and then coming back with privilege now, that was just on my mind a lot. And then the first day, when I landed, I was like, I don't know, I just expected like a homecoming feeling, like, and it kind of was that, but literally like step out the airport and it's like a parking lot where like the taxis and like the vans and stuff like take you to your hotel, and like there was this kid, this little Moroccan dude wearing a shirt with a Confederate flag on it, literally after like after 24 hours straight of traveling, like no sleep. The first thing I see is this kid in a Confederate flag shirt. And I was like, whoa, what, where am I? Like, am I on the wrong plane? Like, what happened? It was just funny. I was like, yeah, days before I left. And then that was like my first day when I got there. People over there seem to like Southern culture, I think. I don't know if they get the context of the flag, but people like Southern accents and like country and stuff. It was interesting, like country blues, stuff like that. They like bump that all the time in like bars and stuff. It's like, it was interesting. Yeah,
you said Americans and Moroccans,
yeah,
vibe pretty well. Could you get into that whole thing?
Yeah, basically, like, to other like European countries, like people usually think of us as being like some of the most friendly. And like I think like Morocco also has such a big representation for just being like such a big like reputation for being like outgoing and being like is really hospitable. But it's also just like the little things, like they have, most of Morocco's like indigenous, right? Like they're not even like Arab. But like they have these experiences that a lot of Black Americans go through specifically where like their culture and like their language is seen as like kind of less than. Like you can't talk that way to your teachers. You can't talk that way to like, people at job interviews. Even if they are from where you're from, you cannot talk that way in those situations. Like you gotta like speak French or speak like fancy Arabic. Like they're, and then like cornrows and they wear like locks and twists and stuff like that. Like their hair styles are considered like less than, their clothing are considered less than, and they like go through that, and when they find somebody who like is a foreigner and comes through and like appreciates their culture and like sees past like these like colonial things that have been put on their culture, like it's just like that's when like I feel like Black Americans and like Moroccans just vibe so well. Like, and then let alone that, like when we were talking earlier, like Moroccans dap each other up and like do some of the same exact handshakes that people in America do, like old people, like it doesn't matter who it is, like everybody, it was crazy to me. Like they're your cousins but they're not really your cousins, you know, like they do stuff like that over there, and that was just crazy. It's just little stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you have any people that you met over there that good stories about some of the dope Moroccan people that you met over there?
Well, yeah, like, well, I mean, I feel like one of the most notable ones was like the one time I met someone that knew you personally. That was crazy. I'm still kind of getting over that. Like, yeah, I met somebody that knew Trey when I went to Morocco, like my first like couple months or whatever. I'd say one of my favorite, like just one, someone who's just like a complete character was, this dude that everybody called Sexy, like in English, like they'd be speaking Arabic, whatever, you hear like Sexy, Sexy, like what are you doing, bro? Hey, what's up, Sexy? Like, you're like, what? Like, who is this dude? Like, I kept hearing his name. I was like, who is this guy? And this dude, he's like 230, like 6'4, like has like that perfect, like he looks like he's straight out of like a Hollister ad or something. He's like the light skinned version of like a Hollister like model. And so, but he's so like super, super religious and super like pious and disciplined and all this. So, but his friends are like hood rats. Like they go do like hooligan and like, but he like tags along with them. So he's like over there, like he's like praying while there's like a prostitute, like all up on his friends. So he's like, oh, yeah. But it was just like, I remember there was one scene in particular where we went to a bar, and like, so bars were illegal for Moroccans to go to, for the time that like the French were colonizing like Morocco. So the French could go, but as far as I know, Moroccans couldn't go. So, like, it's still kind of taboo for people to go there. And it's, like, taboo, and they got, like, it's just really shady, like, drug situations, like, prostitution situations in some of the bars. Yeah, it's, like, right, exactly. And so, but we brought our friend Sexy there, and it's, like, the smoky, like, literally underground bar where it had, like, a speakeasy door. Like, you, like, open, like, the slide thing, and, like, they're, like, hey, like, what's the password, blah, blah, blah. And, like, if you know somebody, you can come in. Like, that type. We went in. And, like, we're auto order, like, I order, like, you know, like, whiskey on the rock. Somebody orders, like, you know, a bourbon or whatever. Sexy just gets an ice cream cone. He gets, like, like, ice cream with sprinkles. And then, like, yeah, that was the funniest thing to me. And that's just something that just shows a lot about the way, yeah, like, discipline, like, the way, like, spirituality is different over there. Like, people who are really religious in Morocco versus here, like, have, like, they just get so much respect because, like, it's so much, like, their religion, like Islam has a lot of daily practices and, like, daily reminders with, like, dhikr and hijab and, like, different things to remind yourself of, like, what your place is in the world in reference to, like, spiritual forces and stuff like that. And people who just do it, it's hard, man. It's really hard. Like, praying it, like, 5 times a day and, like, I tried it a couple times. Like, I'm not Muslim myself, but I just wanted to kind of try to, like, get into the mindset. Yeah, over there, it's just like they just walk with like this confidence and this, you can just feel the, I don't, it's hard to describe. Like, it's not like, because people who are really religious over here do not have the same, it's not the same aura, it's just not the same. It's kind of hard to explain. Yeah. Modesty. Yeah. Yeah. Modesty was really interesting. I heard, there's some Moroccan women who, no, not Moroccan women, actually. I'm lying on myself. No, it was like some American women that were hijabi that came with me, that were like in like the program. And we were all like having this conversation about like modesty versus, like, you know, just like wearing like whatever you want, quote unquote. And like, cause people have this idea that women wear hijab because they're like oppressed or like pressured into doing it, or like they're told to do it, or like, this is what good women do is they do this. And it's like a lot of, and like, it was these American hijabi women specifically, shout out Misha, shout out, Imani as well, if y'all are listening. Like specifically what they told me and other Moroccan women told me is that the way they see it in America is they feel like American patriarchy is telling women to take their clothes off. So like it's almost like it's like the other way around. Like they feel like we feel like their men are making them wear clothes. Well, they're over there like wow, like their women are so oppressed. Like they have to wear like booty shorts, yoga pants, and stuff like that. Which was just really interesting to me. Really, just like just totally shifted my perspective. Their feminism is different because their patriarchy is different. Also, colonialism brought them. It didn't bring them feminism. It brought them another patriarchy to fight against. So now they're going against like the one they had at home and the European one that the Spanish and the French brought to them. And like one way that women take control of that, the way that women have explained to me this like Western like patriarchal idea to like try and just, you know, just get all your clothes off and like to try and get you to wear like, well, like wear bikinis, like it's good, like you're a free woman. And I feel like there's nothing wrong with either. I feel like women should be able to wear whatever you want. But I do feel like there's a weird like time where people are a little too encouraging to like get women to take their clothes off. You feel me? Like, oh yeah, like you should like not wear a shirt. Or, like, you know what I mean? I don't know. I became a lot more neutral and more like less judgmental, realizing that like there are other ways to do things in like other ways of life. Like it seems so obvious, but like you just like, and we were talking about this earlier, like you can't know what you don't know. And like, so you just can't like, it's kind of hard to be judgmental because there's like just stuff that you don't know that's going on. I could talk about this all day, honestly, but yeah.
So can we get into the spiritual journey that you said you had while you were over there? Like how did this process begin? And I guess go through a 1, 2, 3, you know, however chronological order that this happened. Could you take us through that journey that you went through?
So I guess like I feel like I did grow a lot spiritually. I think just before, I guess step one, before I even got to Morocco, I was like learning a little bit about Islam, about the traditions, about the culture, because I was learning Arabic. And like one thing that just shows again like how much practice there is in Islam is like the Arabic language has Islam in it. Like you can't speak Arabic without knowing something about Islam. And so that was my first just interaction with it, was like, damn, like these people like walk the walk, like this is like their everyday type stuff. So that's kind of was my mindset, because it was always like, for me, like religion was always once a week, like on Sundays, you feel me? Like I mean, I would pray every once in a while and then like go to church on Sunday, clean my act up, like blah, blah, blah. But so that was just where I was at before. The next step was realizing that like, so there's a saying, like a Muslim saying, it's in Arabic. It's like, inshallah, like inshallah. Yeah. Yeah. For those out there that don't know, it means like God willing, or like may God like allow this to happen. So like when people make plans, they will say inshallah, like I hope it works out, like because people, and it might be like a part of dhikr, or like remembering God's place over you. Like people are always conscious of the fact that they're not in control of everything. And I feel like it almost seems like it's more true over there too, though. Like the way that like nature is mixed in with the city, like it feels like let's say like you want to go like have fun, like you want to go surfing, but like it depends on how the weather is, how the waves are. Like it depends on so many things that aren't in your control that are only up to like whatever you believe in, God, nature, or whatever. Like, yeah, that's basically it. Just realizing that we're not in control of everything. And I think coming back, step three, was realizing that there are so many people here that both just feel so much responsibility, like are so hard on themselves because they believe that like everything going wrong is because like they didn't do this or they didn't do that, or like you're late because, you know, you were irresponsible, versus like, I don't know, like other things. Like there's like, people don't make excuses for themselves. They're like, not make excuses, but like there's too much weight, I feel like, on our shoulders, and like there's more than there actually has to be. Like we're not in control of everything. We don't like there's like that saying, like man plans and God laughs, or whatever. It's like, that's kind of the attitude that I've kind of adopted from that. And the idea is like, things will work out. Like, I feel more stressed out being here because like it feels like literally like if something has to go right, I have to do like this, this, and that, and a third. Like, but when I was in Morocco, the attitude was like, I do my part and then like God will like help me like figure it out too. And I just felt, I don't know, I felt way more forgiving towards myself, way more forgiving towards others, like when other people are late, or like when other people, like, I don't know. But it's a balance though. Like you can be too forgiving, you can be too like a little bit of a pushover, but it's like finding that balance and like that journey, like that was something I wasn't even, that wasn't even a part of my mental, like, atmosphere before I went to Morocco.
We can close out on this question, and for those who haven't maybe urged them or influenced their thoughts on traveling abroad, and I guess let's be more specific and talk about traveling to Africa, since this is what your journey specifically is.
All right, yeah, I got something to say to all the white people out there. Like, real talk though, literally countries where 99% of the population isn't white are still safe. Africa is a very safe place to go. It's like any place, like, if you go to any big city, if you walk in through the hood at like 3 a.m., like, you just, like, you're being stupid. It's like that, like, Paris. I felt more unsafe in Paris than I did in Morocco when I was in the motherland. And then, like, you will see, like, when you're there, when you see, like, when you see white people there, when you see other white people there, like, they will be so shook. Like, there will be smiles and people, like, offering you food and, like, places to, like, sleep and stuff like that. And, like, people will be so scared, and it just, like, ruins your whole experience. People will be racist the whole time and, like, not learn anything, basically, and just be so scared. Places that are more highly melanated are still just as safe as any other place. And sometimes, well, never mind. I got something else for maybe another interview. Who knows?
I would like to thank Julius for coming through, man. This is a great interview.
Yeah,
he actually has inspired me to, for real, want to take a journey. And I've always wanted to take a journey, but hearing his personal account and his personal experiences, because like he said, you don't know what you don't know. I can watch a lot of videos, but hearing firsthand accounts is a little bit, it's a different experience. And I definitely want to, you know, take my international travels and specifically travels to Africa. So I'd like to thank Julius for coming in.
Thank you.
One more time. This has been another episode of Aims Untold. Tune in next Friday.
Thank you, Trey Moore, for Aims Untold. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host, and Susan Guiasta has joined us, Ames Public Relations Officer. Susan, welcome back.
It's always great to be here. It's hard to believe another month has already passed.
I know. Susan comes once a month and gives us a civic update, so it's always great to have you.
It looks like this season has actually finally changed a little bit. We were just discussing it's a little bit warmer today. The warmer weather and spring reminds us at every time of this year we hold the annual Eco Fair. So some people might remember when the Eco Fair was held in March. We've actually moved it into April. We want to associate it a little bit closer to Earth Day. Mm-hmm. And we actually were hoping that the weather would be a little bit nicer and maybe we could take advantage of the outside a little bit. That hasn't helped us so far. But this year it is Saturday, April 20th.
Earth Day is the 22nd. Is that right?
I believe you're correct. 21st, 22nd.
Okay.
Saturday, April 20th is the Eco Fair. It will be held at the Community Center Gymnasium, which is that gym at the side of City Hall, 515 Clark Avenue. We are lucky in that we've had the last couple of years an all-electric vehicle display in the lot across the street to the south on Fifth Street in the Zion Egg parking lot. We'll have that again this year.
So Eco Fair is an annual event.
It is annual.
And what is it?
So it's been going on for almost 20 years and was started by our former Energy Services Coordinator, Steve Wilson, who passed away in January. He was the big promoter, and this was his kind of baby. It started out as an event to focus on electric consumption. So the Eco Fair would be a place where you would learn about how to maybe change out your lighting, look at ways to conserve electricity, insulation, really focused on electricity. But we realized over time that the entire city deals a lot with sustainability. So let's kind of blow that up and make that an all-city event where we look at water conservation. We look at stormwater runoff and water quality. We look at things you can do with landscaping. We even look at things like maybe you would like to bike more. And what about bike commuting? Where are the trails in Ames? How could you do that? What about taking Cyride? What if you wanted to utilize more green-friendly transportation? We realized it touched almost every department. Obviously, our resource recovery plant, which is really unique to Ames, the idea that in Ames we use our garbage to produce fuel for the Ames power plant. We're not sure that people really understand that system. So the Eco Fair became – it used to be called the Energy Fair. It blew up. It became the Eco Fair, and now we have moved it into April. We usually get a really nice turnout. We're hoping again that we will see a lot of new faces. We have tons of great information. It is definitely all ages.
And it's basically it's a layout of a lot of booths for different topics.
Vendors and organizations, activities. There's a kids' corner, which is really fun. Kids get kind of like a passport, and they need to go get it stamped at different booths, participate in different activities where they learn things about what is a watershed, how can I make a difference in the community, what kind of pledge can I make to be more sustainable. The bookmobile is there. And if kids fill out their passports, they get a really nice prize at the end. So it really is all ages. Parents can look at the other booths while the kids kind of take care of their activities. I have seen – I've watched it evolve over the years. It really is a great event, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. So it's a come and go.
And what day is it again?
Saturday, April 20th.
Do you usually get a lot of people?
We get over 1,000 people over the course of the morning. The one thing that's different this year, and we always try to improve the event, is that we're having eco chats, which are kind of what we're referring to as mini TED Talks. So they're on specific topics. So if you came to the Eco Fair and wanted to take 15, 20 minutes and go to an Eco Chat, we have a schedule on our website, but some of the topics would be know your watershed, pollinator gardens, leave the car at home, how to commute by bicycle, a sustainable story time for kids. So the public library will help us with that one. Learn how to compost. And backyard birds and backyard bird habitat. So there is a schedule online, 20 minutes. You don't register. You just pop in, listen to a speaker. There's not a PowerPoint. This is very informal and kind of a come and go type of thing. We have tried in the past to have more like seminar types of activity, and we find that that Saturday morning crowd really just wants to come and go. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that the Eco Chats gain some traction this year and people find them helpful. And if that's the case, we'll continue them.
And who's leading the Eco Chats?
Every topic has a different speaker. So we reached out to our local experts. You know, you'll recognize some names. Todd Burris has the Wild Birds Unlimited store. Mm-hmm. Jacob Nolte is with Ames Bicycle Coalition. Jerry Hyde is our own librarian with the Ames Public Library and Bookmobile. So we have different experts who come to us with their topics. And if these are successful, again, we'll be looking next year for new topics and new subject matter experts. I'm really feeling that people are going to enjoy these. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a great, great event. The EcoFair gives us an opportunity, again, just to remind people of all the great rebates and programs that the City of Ames currently has.
Yeah, this is the rainy season.
It is the rainy season.
This is about water.
Water. And we have, so we've always had a rain barrel rebate program. Mm-hmm. I got a rain barrel a couple of years ago and was surprised at how helpful it is. All that rain coming off your house and your rooftop, going down your gutters, a rain barrel just collects that. It saves it for when you need it later. And I watered my garden all summer with my rain barrel. I was completely surprised that it would work. I have a very small garden.
And it has a nice spigot so that you can pour the water right into your bucket.
Absolutely. It was really great. One year I had put it on the ground. The next year I realized if you put it up a little bit, the whole gravity-fed system works a little bit better.
Yeah, we have two of them. And, you know, I had a friend come visit me from Colorado, and she saw my rain barrel, and she said, oh, you know, she said in Colorado, it's illegal to gather water, rainwater.
Oh, well,
and she was so jealous.
Oh, well, they're great. I get a lot of people who look at, so I've since bought a second one because I have multiple downspouts and can put them in different locations. They are great. There is a $50 rebate when you purchase one. It is available on our website at cityofames.org. And we've offered this year a second rebate for food composters. So if you're interested in doing food composting, you could come to the Eco Fair, learn a little bit more about it.
Is this something you can put inside the house, or is this for outside
the house? These are outside food composters. And, you know, composting is not difficult, but there are a series of steps to get it to work. And it does need a little bit of attention. Sometimes people get frustrated because the compost doesn't work exactly like they thought it was going to. So you do need to put a little time and energy into it. But once you get it, you know, it makes sense and you end up with some great compost. If you're a gardener, it's terrific. If you don't want the compost, it's usually easy to find somebody who does.
And it's so the next, one of the next big garbage frontiers too.
I think so, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a cost share rebate with that, where we will give $50 back if you purchase a food composter. And again, you need to be a City of Ames utility customer, so you need to be getting a City of Ames utility bill to take advantage of those. Those programs are run through our utilities, so they're really reserved for customers. And they've been pretty successful. We've had several people apply for the rebate for the food composter, and it's only been available for a couple months. So that's been really helpful. One of the other events we have in April that people ask about fairly early on is Yard Waste Free Day. I often come in the fall and we go through the four dates for that. But in the spring, there is only one Yard Waste Free Day. So I need everybody to mark their calendar right now for Saturday, April 27th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Chamness Technology on Frail Drive. That is the location where it's been for the last couple of years. You can get rid of your yard waste at no cost at this event. And I know that a lot of people are kind of getting antsy with this nicer weather. They're out raking. And you know, you don't always get all the leaves and debris from the fall. So I do have a couple of bags myself in the yard that I didn't get out last fall. So I will also be taking advantage of Yard Waste Free Day.
Is this a pickup service or you bring it there?
Nope. You bring it out to Chamness Technology and you can bring it out in plastic bags, but they will ask you to dump. So if you bring it your yard waste out in compostable bags, like the paper ones, you can kind of throw and go. If you want to use the really heavy-duty plastic bags, some people do because you can reuse those several times. You won't be able to throw those. You'll have to empty your yard waste out, and then you'll take your bag with you.
So. And where does it go?
All the yard waste that goes to Chamness Technology, they have a large commercial composting business.
So and where is that?
On Friel Drive in East Ames. You'd go out on Lincoln Way past the resource recovery plant, and you just keep going. So just a reminder, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. We are in the midst of developing a comprehensive plan for the City of Ames. I think we've talked about that here before. The idea of kind of a roadmap for growth and development and kind of getting input from the community on what they value and the type of community they would like to live in the next couple of decades. So our comprehensive plan is called Ames Plan 2040. So it's a look ahead for several decades. And we have a survey online where we ask a series of questions about what's important to you as our community grows. And it is a little bit longer survey than I think most people are used to, but I really, really would encourage anybody that has an interest in helping to direct future growth to take that survey on our website, cityofames.org/AmesPlan2040. That survey will only be up until April 15th. So we have about 400 responses. We'd really like to get closer to 600. So we still have a ways to go. Like I said, I took the survey and it it was longer than I expected. So I had to spend a little time. And it also makes you think about what's important to you. What kind of community do you want to live in? Where should growth be focused? What type of features are important to you, like open green space or unique shopping? Lots of things to think about when you think about how a city might grow in the future.
Okay. Any last words, Susan?
Well, you know, April, so I just have to – I couldn't leave without just giving a shout-out to some long-term Ames employees who have retired recently. So we said goodbye to Assistant City Manager Bob Kindred, who had been here 38 and a half years. Just recently, he had his retirement reception. But even in addition to Bob, Sherry Kyrus, our transit director, left. And, of course, Lynn Carey, our Ames Public Library director, left. Obviously, those positions will be replaced. But we've lost a lot of seniority. And those public servants have served this community really well over the last many decades. And we're very appreciative of their service.
Okay. Thank you. Susan Griasta, Public Relations Officer. See you next month.
Thank you, Ursula. It's great to be here.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, with your engineer, Aladdin Alkathiri. Thank you for joining in to listen to us. KHOI will air again today at noon and 5 p.m. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. We'll be asking for your support in the coming weeks to keep community radio alive and well in Central Iowa, and we hope that you can participate in that by donating at whatever level you can. Your support counts. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.